If people truly understood how powerful their mind is, they wouldn't say or think something they didn't want to be true.
Hi, everyone. Drew Pote here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. First of all, before we jump into today's episode with my dear friend Jim Quick, where we talk about breaking through limitations, I just want to say I hope everyone's doing well out there. Reach out to a friend, reach out to a family member, reach out to somebody you haven't talked to in a while, and just shoot them a text and just say, hey, how are you doing? Can I help you with anything? Can I be of support? We all need each other during these crazy times. During quarantine, during lockdown, during this pandemic, things will get better and things will improve. But in the meantime, let's rely on each other. So reach out to somebody that you haven't talked to in a while and let them know you're there for them. As for today's episode, we're talking about breaking through limitations with the boy who had the broken brain, Jim Quick. He takes us on his journey and the launch of his new book, Limitless, and the lessons that are inside of it. It's a great conversation for anybody that thinks or was told that they're not smart enough, they're not good enough to achieve something. You don't want to miss this conversation. Stay tuned.
All right, Jim, welcome to the Broken Brain Podcast.
Dude, I'm so excited to be on here. Thank you, everyone, for who's listening.
You know, I feel like you should be the host of the show because as long as I've known you, you've always told me this story, and I'd love to start there. You were the kid with the broken brain. So let's talk origin story and take our listeners back to how did you get into this world where you're talking about how to live a limitless life?
Yes. Well, when people see me on stages, I do what a lot of people say is pretty limitless. I do these demonstrations where they see me memorize 100 people's names in an audience or 100 words and numbers forwards and backwards. And I always tell people, I don't do this to impress you. I do this to express to you what's possible, because the truth is every single person who's listening to this could do that and so much more, regardless of your age, your background, your education level. We weren't taught. If anything, we were taught a lie that somehow our potential is limited. You know, our intelligence is limited. Our memory is limited. Our ability to have peace of mind or positivity, there's some kind of constraint or border around it. And the reason I know it's possible is because I was the original boy with the broken brain. When I was 5 years old, I remember I was in kindergarten, and there were these sounds, these sirens outside. And we were too small to see what was going on outside, so we all grabbed our chairs and went over to the windowsill. And lo and behold, there are all these fire trucks. And for me, firefighters were like superheroes. They were in costumes. They had their utility belts, and they were going into danger and saving people. And I remember I was in such awe watching them do their thing. And all of a sudden, one of the other students grabbed my chair so that they could use it to look outside the window. And I had a really bad fall. I go headfirst into this iron grate radiator and, you know, knocked out unconscious, blood. And, you know, all I remember is my parents saying that, you know, when I came out of that, out of the emergency room, you know, over the next few weeks or months, like everything changed. I was before where I was very energized, very curious and playful. I just shut down. And really showed up where it was in my limited ability to learn. I had processing issues. I had focus issues. Teachers would repeat themselves and I wouldn't understand what they were saying. It took me an extra few years to learn how to read. I taught myself how to read by reading comic books. That's why I talk about superheroes a lot, because something about the stories brought hope to my life. You know, it ignited my imagination. And the words meant something to me. At the age of 9, where I got this label, was a teacher. I was holding back the class because I wasn't getting the lesson. And I don't think she said it out of spite. But basically, the other kids were teasing me and giving me, you know, a lot of negativity for not being able to learn like everybody else. And the teachers, you know, came up and just said, you know, stop, you know, Jim has the broken brain. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like almost saying like you have a broken ankle.
Right. Exactly. And because everyone, you know, people knew about my head injury and I had, you know, I still have kind of a scar there, and it was kind of a defining characteristic. And, I know her intention wasn't bad. You know, she's trying to protect me, but it just, all I remembered was broken brain. And that label became my limit. And it's funny, like when you're listening to this right now, and I know we're going to talk about, you know, brain health and accelerated learning and memory and all that good stuff, you know, in what area do you feel like you had a label, you know, where you felt like you were stupid or you felt like you were slow or you have something that put you in a box? And that was my box. And so every single time I wasn't good in school, you know, I didn't do well on a test, I would always say, oh, it's because I have the broken brain. If I wasn't picked for sports, which is like all the time, it was because I had the broken brain. And that became my identity. And, you know, adults have to be very careful of their external words because they become a child's internal words. It's not like I was born with that limitation, you know, because when you're born, you're a blank slate. But through experience, through expectations, through environment, you know, we create meaning around something, and it formed this box that it took me years to be able to get out of. And so I struggled. I would only be able to perform up to the limit of what I believed was possible. And so even though I was studying hard because, you know, my parents, they immigrated here, you know, typical immigrant story, and didn't speak the language. My dad at the time was 13 years old. He lost both his parents at that age, because in where they grew up, it was, there's a lot of poverty and a lot of challenges there. So he came to the States to live with his aunt because they couldn't afford to feed him. You know, we lived in the back of a laundromat that my mother worked at. They had, you know, many jobs to keep things going, you know, very hardworking. I was actually raised mostly by my dad's aunt, my great aunt, who I just thought of as my grandmother because I didn't know any different. And it was hard because when I was going through these issues, my grandmother was going into stages of dementia. And being a child at that age, already having my learning disabilities, quote unquote, you know, she was taking care of me, and then I was taking care of her, bringing her soup, and she would call me by my brother's name, or she would repeat something she just said 30 seconds ago. And that was very confusing for me to see. And it's very heartbreaking also, because when somebody, if anyone who's listening to this has ever lost somebody to Alzheimer's and or dementia or some brain aging, it's like when you lose your memories, it's like you're losing who you are. And that left a huge impression on me. So between my, you know, traumatic brain injury, my learning challenges, my losing my grandmother to Alzheimer's, it made, you know, my inspiration for doing this was my desperation. And that continued all through school. I remember I was failing out of English in high school, freshman English, and they called my parents in. It was very embarrassing. And they were like, you know, my teacher was saying, you know, your son's not going to pass my class. And she was like, you know, I'll give you we begged for, you know, an opportunity to fix it. And she gave me an extra credit report to do on Einstein. And I was like, I'm going to do it. And I remember being like, whatever, 13, 14 years old. And like, I'm going to do this well. And I worked on it every day after school for weeks in the library doing, you know, all this research on this genius. And I remember the day it was due, my father had it professionally bound. You know, it was this piece of art, and I couldn't wait to hand it. And I was so proud of it because I put everything into it. And when the class, you know, began, I was really excited about giving it to the teacher. And towards the end of the class, the teacher's like, I have a surprise for all of you. He's like, and then she said, come to the gym, come to the front of the class and give your book report. And I didn't know I had to speak on this book report. I thought I just had to hand it in and write it. And my superpower back then was really being invisible, because I even talking about it right now, I get choked up, because I was always shrinking. I would always sit behind the bigger kids so nobody could see me. I would always literally, if people could see my physiology, it was just making myself smaller. That was my superpower, is not being seen, because when you feel like you're broken, you don't want the spotlight. You don't feel like you have a lot to offer. And so when she said to, you know, talk about your book report, I froze. And I went completely flight. And I couldn't even talk. The words that came out of my mouth was, I didn't do it. I lied to her and said that I didn't do the book report. And you could see her face change, right? And after class, everyone left, and I was the last one there. And I felt so bad, you know, and when I left, I took the book report out of my backpack, and I just threw it in the trash. And I felt like it was a kind of a metaphor for throwing away my potential, you know? So those are the struggles that I had, and everybody has their things. When I was 18, I was lucky enough to get into a local college, and I wanted to make a fresh start, cause that's what I thought freshman meant. And I was like, okay, I got a second chance here to do well. I'm the oldest of three siblings, and I wanted to be a good role model. And I just couldn't do it. And I ended up hitting a wall. I found a mentor that turned me on to personal development, that made me promise to read a book a week. And I was like, I can't do that, but I committed to doing it because, you know, I made this bucket list with him, and a lot of the stuff on that bucket list were things I wanted to do for my folks, because, you know, things they could never afford to do for themselves.
And just to interrupt the story there, because I know you're going along, but what would actually physically happen when you would try to read a book? Like, yeah. Would you just not be able to remember?
Yeah.
Could you not focus? I know sometimes when people have had concussions or traumatic brain injuries, their head actually hurts when they try to read. So what was actually happening physically in the body?
So what I was experiencing internally, so externally what would happen is we would get in those reading circles, right? When we're first learning how to read, I think everyone could relate to that. And they would pass out a book, pass it around, and everyone had to read like a few sentences or a paragraph, right? And I would get more and more nervous as that book came closer, because when I got the book, I would, the words didn't mean anything to me, you know, and I struggled to be able to pronounce the words. And I would just look at it and I would just pass it on. And I was illiterate, you know, and it was a big struggle. I never, you know, talking about this, it'd be interesting because, you know, my teachers back then, they would have been surprised if I read a book, much less wrote a book, you know, for Limitless here, because I would get these headaches. I would have focus issues. I would try to read something. I not only had trouble understanding what things meant, but I had trouble recalling what I just read also as well. And I think that phenomenon is something pretty universal. I think we've all had the experience where you read a page in a book, get to the end, and just forgot what you just read. And you go back and you reread it and you still forget what you just read. But for me, it was more evidence to prove that I was broken. And, so when I got into college and I found this mentor, I promised to read all these extra books, and I couldn't do it. I was able to read at that point, you know, with just, you know, over time. But in order to be able to keep up with my commitment to reading a book a week and all my midterms and everything, I ended up just sacrificing everything else. I lived in the library. I didn't sleep. I wasn't eating because I was so stressed. I wasn't obviously working out or spending time with people. I just lived in the library for weeks and weeks. And then, because I was so determined to do well. And one night I actually passed out of sheer exhaustion. I fell down a flight of stairs. I hit my head again in the library. And I woke up in the hospital 2 days later. And at that point I was wasting away. I was down to like 117 pounds. I was hooked up to these IVs because I was dehydrated. And I thought I died, and it was the darkest time in my life, because I think part of me wished I did, because I was I just felt like I was not anything. And I thought there had to be a better way. When I had that thought, the nurse came in with a mug of tea, and on it was a picture of Albert Einstein, out of all the people, the person I did the book report on, and had these words, this quote saying, "The same level of thinking that's created your problem will not solve your problem." And it made me ask a new question. It's like, what's my problem? Well, I'm a very slow brain, a very slow learner. And I was like, well, how do I think differently about it? Well, maybe I could learn how to learn, you know, learn faster, learn better. And I was like, okay, where do I do that? Well, obviously school teaches you that. So I asked the nurse for a course bulletin. I start flipping through all the pages, and they're all classes on what to learn. Math, history, science, Spanish, good, valuable classes, but there were zero classes on how to learn those subjects. So I set my studies aside and I started really studying the mind. I started studying learning. I started studying adult learning theory, you know, multiple intelligence theory. I started studying ancient mnemonics. I wanted to find out, what did people do before? How did they improve their memory before there were printing presses, right? The ancient cultures. I started studying a little bit about brain science, and I started being fascinated. I started exploring speed reading and all these various methodologies. And about 2 months into it, a light switch flipped on, and I started to really understand things for the first time. I mean, I started to be able to concentrate. I started to comprehend the things I was reading, to understand what was being lectured in school. And my grades shot up, but along with that, so did my life. You know, I just felt like for the first time, I don't know if anyone's listening to this ever struggled with something for so long, and then all of a sudden you overcome it, and then just everything opens up. And because of it, I was actually kind of upset, not kind of, I was really upset and angry that there were simple things that I could have done, you know, for the past decade and a half where I struggled and suffered every single day thinking I had this limit when there were things I could have done to unlimit myself. And I started to share with other people because you learn something for your own benefit, but then you also want to learn it to share with other people. Right. And
So to interrupt you, if I could ask you a question, yeah, just so our listeners could follow along, what were some of the core beliefs that you had to let go of,
yeah,
that you were holding on from the past, and what new beliefs that you had in this transition time?
This is great, because in my book, Limitless, there's a 3-part framework, and I call it the Limitless Model. And if anyone feels like they're held back in any area of their life, their health and wellness, their career, their income, you know, their learning abilities, or any their relationship, that we, if you feel like you're in a box, you know, I talk about 3 forces that keep us in that box. And it's an explanatory schema for not only learning faster, but a really unlocking human potential. Because the questions I was asking was, for me, over the past 3 decades of teaching this, is why do people not do what they know is good for them? That's the primary drive why I wrote this book, because this book primarily, and I'll get to your answer to your question, was a book on methodology. The book, when I first wrote it, were books on this is how you learn a language faster. This is how you read and understand things faster. This is how you memorize a talk or facts or figures, anything better, make good decisions. But I realized after doing this for so long, and field testing this with so many people, from children with learning disabilities and traumatic brain injuries to seniors who are early stage, you know, brain aging challenges, and everyone in between, that they have a certain mindset and they have a certain level of motivation and they have certain methods that they use. And the framework, which we could go into, really will liberate you, because it'll explain why we're falling short in certain areas. So there are 3 parts, and the first part is mindset. So if everyone could think about 3 circles that intersect, kind of like it looks like Mickey Mouse, there are 2 ears and a face. And to answer your question, the first area, mindset, are really those beliefs, those lies. And then I talk about 7 lies in the book. And I use purposely because it's an acronym, and it means limited idea entertained. Limited idea entertained. So it's not something that's necessarily true. It's an idea that we are putting energy towards. And I talk about these 7 lies, and these are these ideas, these limiting beliefs that I held at this stage. You know, like, for example, one of them is that intelligence is fixed. Like it's kind of like this idea about IQ. And so in the book, I highlight the 7 lies to learning. And we all have some of these, and you know, some number of them, because we all went through a traditional education and somehow we learned them. And the good news is, while our limits are learned, they can be unlearned. So some of the beliefs that I was struggling with was my intelligence or my memory, my capability was fixed. And so the opposite of that, and in the book, I have a process of unlimiting, I call, and it's a new word that I coined. I've been using it for years, but unlimiting is the process of removing limits, and it's an activity that you could do, and it's a 3-stage process that I do for negative beliefs. And so I talk about, for example, we name the belief, intelligence is fixed, for example, and then we do the research, and I provide the science of why it's not true. I go about IQ, and that you take this test, this idea that you take it when you're 8 years old, and that's your number when you're 88 years old. And I tell people, and I show people through proof that you could actually be your intelligence is not fixed, and there are multiple forms of intelligence, and you could increase every single one of them. And then we rename it a new affirmation or a new belief. Like, for example, intelligence is fluid, and it could grow, right? And so that was one of my limiting beliefs. Another belief that I had back then was that I was only using 10% of my brain. And that's a mass belief people have, is like you watch these movies out there and it's like, oh, you know, you only use 10 or 20% of your brain and science. And then so I name the belief, and then I show the research. In actuality, we use 100% of our brain. People don't realize that. It's just some people use it much more effectively than other people. It's like we use 100% of our body, right? Everybody uses 100% mostly of their body, and your brain is part of your body. But, you know, if you had to run or hike up, you know, Runyon Canyon, some people could do it with ease, and because they've trained themselves, you know, they're more functional as opposed to somebody. And I talk a lot about in this book, mental fitness, because I believe you could get physically fit, your muscles could get stronger, they could have vitality, they could be flexible and pliable and have great endurance. But I want your mental muscles to be stronger. I want your mental muscles to be pliable and energized and have endurance, you know, your focus to be stronger. And so these are things that we could actually fix and improve. And so those are two of the beliefs that I held back then, because and it's liberating, because once you know you use 100%, it's just how do you use it? How do you apply it? And how do you make it even more fit? Because the assumption, if you only use 10%, it's like, oh, you're not using the other 90% of this resource. And it's not completely true, because if when people are having brain scans, you know, their entire brain is lit up when they're doing these activities.
Or that you can't learn some of these limitless abilities that you talk about in the book unless if you are the rare genius that's
exactly
out there,
yeah,
right? You have to be a savant, you have to be somebody that's born gifted, you either have it or you don't. And really what you're bringing in is that, you know, besides the fact that you had this traumatic brain injury, this concussion, and so people were purposefully picking you out of line saying like, okay, you can't learn because you've had this. For the average person that's listening on our audience, everybody's been told like, or has internalized beliefs of like, oh, I'm just not good at reading, or I'm not good at remembering these things, or I'm not good at like learning this particular type of thing, like a language. But if you could actually train and follow a process of training, that would open up a whole new realm for you.
Exactly. Like another lie is exactly that, the genius is born. And what I found through research, and just not just the latest neuroscience. I mean, this is me working in the field and you know, like with people on a daily basis, is that genius is not born, genius is built. And genius leaves clues, and there's a method behind the magic. So the first circle that we need to address, so everyone, what I want you to do is this, as your limitless brain coach in this session, we can make this kind of like a masterclass, if you will. Think about an area where you feel held back. And limitless is not about being perfect. Limitless is about advancing and progressing beyond what you believe is possible. And we all have an area of our life of what we feel like we're capable of. So mindset are the assumptions and attitudes you have about something. What I feel like falls in this circle, as you draw the mindset circle, are what you believe is possible. That's your part of your mindset. What you believe you're capable of is part of your mindset. I didn't feel like I was capable of a whole lot, right? So my boundary, if you think about being stuck in a box, a 3D box or a cage, if you will, the three dimensions are these three M's. So the first one is mindset. What also would fall under mindset, besides what you believe is possible, what you believe you're capable of, is what you believe you deserve. You know, if you don't believe you deserve a great relationship, or you don't believe you deserve to be able to be a successful leader or entrepreneur or a quicker learner, that behavior, that belief is, all behavior is belief driven. Right? That's a thermostat you're setting yourself up for, right? That temperature.
It's so true. I'll just interject with a quick thing. It's like we have a dear friend of ours, Dr. DeMello, over here, and he says, the number one question I ask my patient when they come in, a new patient, I say, okay, after I hear their story, I ask them, okay, you know, thank you for sharing that. I want to ask you the first question. Do you believe you can get better?
Mm.
Because if you don't believe that you can get better, then how can I work with you?
Exactly.
And a lot of times people believe it without knowing they believe it. And I think that's the point that you're trying to make.
It is very much so, because what I'm doing is the scientific method. I'm looking at this as originally this book, again, was all methodology. And I wanted to, another myth or lie that I put in there, a limited idea entertain, is another BS, which is your belief system, is that knowledge is power. And we say it all the time. I even find myself saying it, but knowledge is not power alone. At best, it's potential power. It only becomes power when we utilize it, when we apply it. And a lot of people, my goal was to for people to apply the techniques. Because I know, you know, we have students online in 195 countries. I know the techniques work for people who use them. And I wanted
This is the online platform, Quick Learning.
Right. So it's like kind of a Udemy, or instead of, it focuses on a course on speed reading or memory enhancement, focus, critical thinking skills, study skills for students, the courses. And so we have a lot of data in terms of what works. And it works when people work it, right? And so knowledge is not power. All the books, you know, podcasts, conferences, teachers, none of it works unless we work, right? And so I wanted to design this book. When I wrote the methodology, I was like, this is top of its class, right? In terms of memory, focus, concentration, all those superpowers. But I wanted to create a book that if it was sitting on somebody's coffee table, that if they had no exposure to me, they would still get the result. And I realized if they read it cover to cover, right? I realized the two areas that were missing were mindset, number one, because if they didn't believe, I could teach somebody how to remember names, but if their mindset is I'm stupid, or I'm too old, or I have horrible memory, all behavior is belief driven, right? Henry Ford said, if you believe you can or believe you can't, either way, you're right. And so that's proof to your friend asking, like, do you even believe it's possible to heal, right? How are you gonna help somebody? And so in the book, I give strategies on how to overcome those lies and turn them into something more. We unlimit those lies.
Give us one tip right now. Share a little preview of the book in just some way. Like, if somebody's out there and they genuinely believe, they have the belief that I'm stupid, right? Yeah. Or I'm not a good learner.
Or I have a horrible memory, right?
Or I have a horrible memory.
Yeah, your brain is like a supercomputer, and your self-talk is the program it will run. So if you tell yourself you're not good at remembering names, that's a big one for a lot of people, right? You will not remember the name of the next person you meet because you program your supercomputer not to. If people truly understood how powerful their mind is, they wouldn't say or think something they didn't want to be true. And that's not to say you have one negative thought and your life is ruined any more than eating that one junk food, right, will ruin your life just one time. And I know junk food, I know Mark talks about this, that it's not just junk and then there's food, it's not like junk food. But the idea here is to reduce that negative self-talk, because people come to me all the time and say, Jim, I'm too old. They say, I'm too old, I have a horrible memory, I'm just not smart enough. And I say, stop. If you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them. If you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them. They're
such
yours.
Such a key phrase right there. I just want everybody to take that in. If you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them.
And people do that all the time. They say to themselves, oh, I'm just too old, or I'm just not smart enough, or I'm just not X, fill in the blank. Whatever you're saying is keeping you in that box. And so one of the strategies that I would do is, first of all, self-awareness is a superpower. So just even you having listening to this conversation is gonna make you more sensitized to your self-talk, right? Because your mind is always eavesdropping on your self-talk. Your mind is always listening. It's always eavesdropping on your self-talk. And so self-awareness is a starting point. Another thing to do also is when you find yourself just self-aware, you're going to do it less. But even when you say something negative, like, oh, I'm not great at remembering names, just catch yourself and add like a little word at the end, like yet. I'm not great at remembering names yet, because words have power to the brain, right? They rewire your brain. And so even things like people's language, they put themselves in trance, like, I don't have creativity, I don't have focus, I don't have motivation. These are not things you have. You're lying to yourself. These are things you do, because the nature of my work is taking these nouns like focus, like creativity, like memory, and turning them into verbs. And when they're verbs, you could control them. and you have a process. And my goal with the book is to show you the method behind what looks like magic, because genius leaves clues. So as this kid, I would say to myself, oh, I'm broken. I have a horrible memory. And I would find evidence to be able to support that all the time, because whatever we look for, we find. So mindset has to be adjusted first, right? And so we unlimit the mindset. So if you have these negative self-talk, first be aware of it, you know, and it, you could be aware through it. It comes up in your meditation. Those are the thoughts that come up. They're the thoughts that come up when we're in challenge or crisis, you know, being aware of that self-talk, because that's that they say we have what, 50 to 70,000 thoughts a day, you know? And so how many of them are controlling our lives unconsciously, the habitual part of it? And then change it to something more empowering. Like people say to themselves, oh man, I gotta pick up my kids. I gotta exercise today. I gotta eat that. I gotta make, you know, food today. But changing a little word like got to get, it totally changes the nature of how it feels, right? I get to pick up my kids today. I get to work out today. You know, I get to meal prep today, right? Changing that little O in got to an E in get. So it's that mindset is that we are in control. And the ultimate mindset, I really do believe, is we are 100% responsible for our life. Like whatever happened in the past, it happened, right? We all have, we all were raised in a certain environment with other people's expectations and experience, and that set up this box. But how we live and learn forward is up to us, because when we take responsibility for something, we have great power to be able to make it better, right? It's the opposite of with great power comes great responsibility. That's true. And with great responsibility comes great power. When we take responsibility, we become the thermostat, not the thermometer. The thermometer reacts to things all the time. And as human beings, we react to the environment, we react to the weather, we react to how people treat us. But the thermostat, it gauges the environment, but then it sets it, right?
So part of this book is like following the narrative of your own life, right? Mm-hmm. Even in your own life, you were unpacking these beliefs and first focusing on your mindset in order then to go on the next part of the journey.
Exactly.
So once we focus on that first part, the mindset piece, what's available to us on the other side?
Yeah, it's beautiful, because on the other side of this book, the book actually, when people receive it, there's a graphic in the beginning of it, and it's the hero's journey, because I wrote it, I was inspired by obviously superheroes and Joseph Campbell's work and the hero's journey, where in the beginning I offer people a challenge. You know, in the beginning of the hero's journey, you'll notice whether it happens to be Wizard of Oz or Star Wars or Harry Potter or The Matrix, right? Where you're pulled out from the ordinary, you're given a challenge to go into a new world. And I give people the opportunity. Is it metaphorically, is it the blue pill or the red pill that they're taking, right? And we go on this journey because in the hero's journey, you get this call to adventure, right? And then you have trials and challenges. And I challenge you because I'm your brain coach. I want to challenge you and do this to become mentally fit throughout this book. And you find your mentor, you find your Yoda, or you find your Miyagi, or you find your Morpheus, right? To be able to help you along that adventure. And you go through and you slay the metaphorical dragon. And then at the end, you get the elixir, you get the treasure. And that's what's waiting for you on the other side of this. And a limitless life. Again, it's about we're all on this hero's journey. We're all on this quest to be able to realize and reveal our fullest potential. I really feel like that's why we're here. And everyone who's listening, it expresses itself in its unique way, but that's your unique story. But at the end, you have that treasure, that elixir. And the goal is, you always see, even in The Matrix, even in Wizard of Oz, you go back to the ordinary world, right? Dorothy came back to the ordinary world and she brought that treasure with her. Right. Even the good witch said, you know, you've had this power the entire time. You know, you just had to learn it. And, you know, with the power to go back home and everything. But the Matrix too, Neo came back at the end of Matrix into the Matrix and said to the computer, basically say, hey, I'm going to show everybody here, you know, what you don't want them to see, that there are no limits, that anything is possible. And I'm hoping at the end of this book, after people unlimit their mindset and their motivation and the methods that they have, they come back at completely, not transform. This is really about transcending. It's about ending the trance that we're not enough, that we're limited. And it's about rewriting our story. One of the people that endorsed the book, Natasha Bedingfield, she has that powerful song Unwritten. And she was like, this book will help people write a brand new story. And that's really the goal. But it starts with your mindset, because again, if I could teach people how to learn a language, all the methods, how to focus, but if you feel like, you're dumb and that's your identity, nothing is going to change. So that's the first circle, mindset. The second circle is just as important. There are three M's. The first M is mindset. The second circle in the Venn diagram, if you will, is motivation. Now, when I say motivation, here's the thing. A lot of people, there are these myths around motivation, right? You hear motivation, it's kind of a loaded word. People feel like they get pumped up, they go to a seminar, they dance on chairs, and then the next day, they don't change. They're still not exercising, they're still not journaling or meditating, they're still not eating the food. Why is that? Why is it that we're interested in something but we don't follow through? And I because I grew up with that broken brain label, I became curious. I would just watch people all the time and ask these questions, like, why is that person so successful? What are they doing that I'm not doing, right? Why they're so, and where does motivation really come from? Sustainable motivation, because many people saw the Limitless movie or the Limitless television show with Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro, where he took the pill and he goes from this, as he was painted like a degenerate who was kind of like not doing anything and is really scruffy and not motivated at all. He takes the pill and not only was able to like remember everything and learn languages and read all this stuff and write his book really fast. Yes, that's the kind of the promise of the book. And yet he had this surge of motivation. But after 24 hours, the pill wore off and then the motivation just stopped. No motivation. So my question in motivation is, what's true motivation that's sustainable? And I figured out a formula, a three-part formula for sustainable motivation and drive. And it's not getting excited in the moment. And the lie around motivation, one of the lies that I demystify or we unlimit, is this lie that to be motivated for something, you have to enjoy it, right? Like people think, and I just have this talk with Tom Bilyeu, right? Who, one of the founders of Quest and Impact Theory, and he works out every morning at 4:30 or 5 a.m. And I was like, do you enjoy it? He was like, I never miss a day. And I was like, do you enjoy it? He was like, no, I hate working out. It's the activity I hate the most. But he's motivated to do it. Like every single morning, many people have seen the millions of views of me and my morning routine. And you and I have had this conversation, in your docuseries, and the 10 things I do every morning to jumpstart my brain. And one of them is take a cold shower or take an ice bath. Now, I grew up in the Northeast. I hate the cold, but I never miss doing that every morning now because I'm motivated, right? But I don't enjoy it. So what's the difference? So the formula for motivation, and we can go into it a little bit deeper later, is this: P times E times S3. That is the formula for sustainable motivation in anything. So if you suffer from procrastination, then this is the reason why you're lacking one of these three things, right? And it's purpose times energy times small, simple steps. And how I came up with this formula was very simple, because I just study it. I wanna say, okay, I wanna build this perfect person who's motivated. Now, what do they need? But the first thing is the purpose. They need a reason. I'm not necessarily talking about your life purpose, although I talk about it in the chapter on purpose, finding that, right? And the difference between passion and purpose and that conversation. But purpose for me is having a reason to do something. Like I don't enjoy cold showers. It's good for our health. It's good for our skin. It lowers inflammation, right? All those benefits. But I have a clear reason for doing it, right?
Which is,
I have some issues with my, I've had issues in the past with my sleep, mm-hmm. right? And it's something that you and Dr. Hyman helped me tremendously with. And I had very bad sleep apnea, extremely severe sleep apnea, where over 200 times I would stop breathing. Every time I stopped breathing, it was more than 10 seconds. So I'd wake up and the doctors at UCLA was like, hey, no wonder you're not sleeping. It's like somebody coming in and putting a pillow on your head, on your face 200 times a night. Right. And part of it also came through my habits of schooling, because I would pull all these all-nighters all the time because I always had to work three times harder than everybody else to get less results. And I started developing that those bad habits. And then part of it was obstruction, you know, with my apnea, and I had to have surgery to remove my tonsils, my uvula, my soft palate, because the airway did just, it was blocked. So it created all these issues. But my reason for doing it is really my passion is learning. I feel like passion, I'm defining it as what lights you up. But my purpose is what lights up other people. So my passion is learning, and my purpose is teaching other people how to learn so I can light them up also as well. So that's my drive. And so even when I wasn't sleeping very well in the past, literally about 90 minutes, 2 hours a night, waking up still 9 to 14 times a night, so it wasn't even a solid amount of time, I was still getting on planes and getting on stages in front of 200,000 people a year, publishing all this stuff, like, you know, these videos and everything. But what kept me going was I was motivated because I was clear about my reason. I grew up labeled as the boy with a broken brain. My purpose is to build better, brighter brains, right? And to leave no brain left behind. So that reason keeps me going.
And I think part of the thing that I want to break down with that is that I'm sure that in the beginning, that reason wasn't clear. Like when you were first just getting started on your journey, which a lot of people can relate to, if they have a limit in their head and they want to break free and step into limitless, they may not know that exact purpose in the beginning. They may not know their purpose and their reason and their why, but you still get started. And in retrospect, it all makes sense, right?
Hindsight.
But in the beginning, you don't have to have it all figured out.
Absolutely. And you'll see in the S3 part of the formula why it's so important. But I'm not even talking, this happens to be my life purpose, but it could be simple as really associating yourself. Let's say people are avoiding, let's say, their meditation or something that we talk about regularly that we know it's good. Science just shows this is good for you, right? But we're still not doing it. It doesn't have to be your life purpose. It could be finding the reason, all the benefits, and feeling the benefits that come from doing that. And that includes also the pain, because a lot of people, they avoid pain, but pain could be a huge motivator. Like one of the things could be thinking about the benefits that come from motivation, like meditation, right? Peace of mind, positivity, you know, you recovering and rejuvenating. But if that's not enough for you, and you have to feel it, not intellectually, but you have to feel it in your heart. I believe the formula is head, heart, hands. You could have the great mindset and set goals in your head, but if you're not acting with your hands, check in with the second H, which is your heart, the emotions, because we are not logical. As people think they are, they're not. We're not logical, we're biological, right? Dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. This is a chemical soup of emotions that drive us to do certain things. But I think what's important for this is knowing the reasons and feeling the reasons. And that's the purpose for that activity. So if you're putting something off, start with why. One of the testimonials on the book came from Simon Sinek, and he wrote that book, Start With Why, right? And really feeling that. And he could also be including the pain. Like, if you don't do this activity, if you're not taking care of yourself, you know, what if you're not going to be there to be able to walk your child down the aisle? You know what I mean? Like feeling that, who's counting on you to show up and be healthy and be vibrant, and feeling the pain of that, because if it gets you to act in something positive, that for me, that's something that's empowering. So whether it's your life purpose, and we do talk about it a little bit in the book, and how passion is not something necessarily you just find, but you can build. Like we have a bonus chapter in the book about limitless parenting and limitless for business. And then when working with kids, right, the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset and labels and not calling them, you know, genius or you're so smart, but rewarding discipline and effort, we know goes further. Same thing with the motivation is motivating people in a way that gets you to be able to act. So acting as if and finding your why and allowing yourself to feel the good or the bad that leads to a positive result. So that's the first part, is the P is purpose. The E, now my mind goes like this, these thought experiments. Let's take this person who's motivated all the time and they have that reason. Are they motivated 100% of the time? Is there any situation where they are not? And the evidence of being motivated is you take action, right? Somebody could say they're motivated, but if they're not acting, there's no motivation, right? So if they just have a reason, are they always 100% of the time motivated? And my answer was no. I know cases from clients and people that I've worked with that, let's say they want to read a book a week or read every single day, or they want to work out every single day, and they have a reason. They're very clear on the reason, yet they still won't do it. Why? It's missing the E. P times E. The E is energy. So you could say that you want to read 45 minutes a day, and you can be motivated in all the benefits. You're going to make more money. You're going to become an expert in your field. You're going to be able to do well on your test and still not do it because you ate a lot of processed food and you're in a food coma because you don't have the energy, or you didn't sleep the night before because the kids were up. And so if you lack the energy, you're not going to have the motivation, because the energy is the fuel that drives the car, right? And so you have purpose times energy. So in the book, I talk about the 10 keys for unlocking mental vitality, right? That from everything from the foods to an extended section on sleep, because that was my kryptonite when I was struggling for that decade until, you know, I figured out what it really took for me to maximize my deep and my REM sleep. And, you know, and those are just two of the things, but stress management, stress sucks out so much energy, right? So there are mechanisms in the book on how to be able to lower your stress levels, right? Another part are energy vampires. The people you spend time with could suck your energy, right? So you could want to do something and you could have the reasons, but your energy is low because the people around you are just putting you down and they're draining you. And
did you have any of that in the beginning of your journey?
I did.
You were breaking out of that?
I did. I mean, sleep was hard because I was going because my reason was clear. I wanted to make my family proud. So that's why I would pull up all the all-nighters. I wasn't eating the best food ever because I was buying into this myth of commercial. And I was just saying, okay, drink 7 glasses of milk and have a, you know, and from one guru in this space early on when I was in college, I listened to, it was like juice, you know, oranges every single morning. And I would go, I had no money in college, but I would walk all the way to the grocery store to buy organic oranges, which I didn't have the money to do. And I would come back and I would like literally get coins and be able to pay for it and juice all these oranges, not knowing that the sugar, the amount of sugar in there was affecting my ability. So I had, you know, I wasn't doing all the things for energy, and I surrounded myself with some friends that weren't the most encouraging friends ever, that they wanted to go out all the time and drink and do all these all-nighters and stuff like that. So I had enemies, and really what we're talking about motivation, it's energy management, right? And so again, part of the formula, purpose, find your reason for doing it. Find your reason for remembering names. A lot of people don't remember names. One of the reasons why is they don't have a reason to remember their name, right? They're not feeling the association of all the good things that will come from remembering someone's name, the gift you're giving to somebody while you remember their name. But here's the thing, we don't remember all names, but nobody here listening forgets all names either. I guarantee you the names that you remember, you have a reason. You're attracted to that person. That person could be good for your business. There is an implicit reason. And what I'm saying is, reasons reap results. Get clear with the reasons and feel it. Feel the pain that person's going to feel if you forget their name. Allow yourself to feel it if it makes you better, right? So purpose times energy, and the 10 habits of optimizing your mental vitality are in there. And then finally, I was like, okay, if somebody is fully motivated, you know, are they fully motivated if they have a reason and they have energy 100% of the time? And I'm like, no. There are cases in which they won't act. And in which case, what's missing? A small, simple step. In their mind, they want to be motivated to start a business. They want to be motivated to find their soulmate. They want to be motivated to have the perfect body. But
big audacious goals.
Exactly. And so they could have a purpose, right? A real clear reason why they want that soulmate. They could have all the energy in the world, right? But they'll still not do it because it's too big, right? It's too audacious.
And sometimes people repeatedly pick big goals, mm-hmm. because it's almost like there's a part of their ego, or call it whatever you want, that is afraid of actually making progress on the
right.
journey.
So exactly.
I'll see sometimes people say like, okay, no, I'm not going to write an article and submit it to Medium or do something like that. I'm just going to write my next book.
Exactly.
And they've been working on 13 different versions of their next book, but none of them have been published, because it's easy to sort of live in that space rather than truly make progress on the things that we want to make progress on.
Exactly. And that's so well said. So that person will not be motivated. They'll stall, or they'll sabotage, or they'll procrastinate, and they could be motivated and they could have the energy, unlimited boundless energy, right? Because they're subscribing to all the lifestyle things that give them mental energy. Yet they still won't act because this goal is too big. Or it's too daunting.
They're afraid of, what if I'm not good enough?
Yeah, and that's going back to the mindset. Right, absolutely. And that's why everything is woven together, because this is just like functional medicine. Everything is related to each other and everything affects everything else. And maybe it's not a big, too big. Maybe it's not clear. And when a confused mind doesn't do anything.
Give us an example of a goal.
Yeah, so a small, simple, perfect.
Maybe isn't clear.
So a small, simple step, S3. So again, the motivation formula to have sustainable motivation for anything, 3 parts. You have your purpose, the reason, you have energy, and you have a small, simple step. So the goal here is to take that big thing in your mind and break it down into the smallest, simple thing you could do where you cannot fail. The smallest step you could take to make progress, but you can't fail at it. Meaning it's so easy. And when I'm saying energy management, purpose gives you energy, right? Clarity gives you energy. Like mental vitality and eating the best foods and sleep give you energy. And a small, simple step requires very little energy. It requires very little effort. So you're going to do it. An example, if you want to have that great body, right? And you can't get yourself to work out. A small, simple step is put on your running shoes, right? A small, simple step for in there, I go deep into habits, because on my podcast, you know, I've interviewed everyone from James Clear, who wrote Atomic Habits, to Dr. BJ Fogg, who had Stanford University's behavioral psychology. And we talk about habits. So I give you the formula for habits, but habits are really built on these small, simple steps. Dr. BJ Fogg talks about flossing. We know flossing helps, you know, having good oral hygiene will help you live longer, right? But some people do not floss. They're not motivated to floss their teeth. So taking that through the formula motivation, feeling the reasons, you know, of longevity, of health and looking good and everything like that, allowing and doing stuff, energy, making sure you have the energy to floss, which doesn't require a lot of energy, hopefully, and that's not your big struggle. But a small, simple step is flossing one tooth. Right? How do you break it down so little? Because nobody's going to stop at one tooth. It's just like, I like to encourage people. We have a whole one book a week club, because we teach people how to read. And there's a whole chapter on speed reading in here and how people could read 3 times faster with better comprehension, and to be able to read one book a week, as opposed to what most people do, which is like 2 books a year. If anyone who's ever like bought a book, this is a little just pet peeve of mine. There's a different competency skill of buying a book than reading a book, right? Some people are really good at buying books and they sit on their shelf and it becomes shelf help, not self help. That's one set of skills. And I know, I imagine somebody listening to this like, yeah, that's me. I'm the world class expert at buying books. But reading a book is a little bit different, right? And so let's say you want to read, you know, a book a week. Don't try to read a book a week. A small, simple step, read one sentence. Because nobody's going to stop at one sentence, right? And so that's the goal. And then all of a sudden you're motivated, because you're not intimidated by this big thing. You're taking a small, simple step, and you have your reasons, and you have unlimited boundless energy. So that's the motivation.
And the work of BJ Fogg is also too, that when you do that smallest thing, even if you do stop there, you're creating that new neural pathway.
Exactly.
There's no difference between, in terms of creating a new neural pathway for doing, let's say if somebody's goal is doing 100 pushups.
Mm-hmm.
One pushup done regularly is the basics that is going to build that neural pathway that's going to make it easier. Yep. To go downhill on that behavior the next time.
Because you know what you're doing, because you got it exactly right. The neuroplasticity, you're rewiring your brain with every single time you do it, and you're creating the habit of showing up for yourself. That habit of showing up for yourself is so important, because how you do anything is how you do everything. So that's why we did a whole section and chapter on habit design, because we know first you create your habits, then your habits create you. You create your habits of meditation, of moving every single day, of prioritizing your sleep, and those habits create you right back. And then in the, so really this is three books in one. This is a book here with a full section on mindset to be able to eliminate negative beliefs that hold you, that limit you in that box, and to unlimit and give you the new empowering habits that if you, or and habits of mind, if you will, to be able to reach your goals with ease, the other, and enjoyment. And then the second part of the book is all about motivation and has a chapter on each of those. Purpose, a chapter on energy, on brain energy specifically, and a chapter on small, simple steps and habits. And then the final chapter in that section is a chapter on flow states. Because flow states, as you know, is that state of the zone where you lose sense of self, you lose sense of time, things are effortless. You don't have to motivate yourself. So there's a science to hacking that flow when you get the other things in place. So that's the second M, it's motivation. Now look at this model now. These are the two ears, if you will, of Mickey Mouse. You have mindset and you cross over a little bit with motivation, but you could still have unlimited mindset. Everything is possible, you deserve it. And you could have unlimited motivation because you're using that three-step formula and still be stuck in that box. Why? Because you might be lacking the methods. You might be using old methods to get that result. Let's map it out into your health. You could be using an old, antiquated, unuseful, or ineffective way of eating or combining your food or when you're eating.
Juicing oranges.
Exactly. That would be the case. Or in the case of learning is, you know, rote memorization, repeating things 100 times. That is such an old method that no longer serves us today. An old method in reading, you know, it's that we learned because last time we took a reading class, how old were we? 6, 7 years old. And so we learned an old antiquated method of reading that doesn't serve us today. So for example, we learned that when we passed around that book, we had to read out loud to understand it. And then later on, your teacher, and I'm sure a lot of people could relate to this, said, read quietly to yourself, read silently to yourself. And that's where you took that external voice of reading out loud and you internalized it. And they call it sub-vocalization. Sub-vocalization, you'll notice, when you read something, you notice that inner voice inside your head that reads along with you. Hopefully it's your own voice. It's not like somebody else's voice in there. The reason why it's a challenge is if you have to say all the words inside your head or out loud, you can only read as fast as you could speak. And that's sub-vocalization. But science, we've proven, because we teach people to read much faster than that, that you don't have to say the words in order to understand them. You don't have to look at a stop sign and say stop in order to understand what stop is. But 95% of the words in any book or email or text or anything else, they're sight words. It's that you don't have to pronounce those words like you don't pronounce, this words are symbols, like punctuation marks are symbols. You don't say period, question mark, exclamation mark, right? But you know what they mean. You know what the words the, of, there, the, because, you know what all these words mean also. And so that was an old method we learned. So what I'm looking to do is when I say unlimit your mindset, it's about unlimiting, freeing yourself and liberating yourself of those negative beliefs about you're not worth it, you're not smart enough. Unlimiting your motivation is saying motivation is not static. It's not something you have. There are three things that you're doing, right? Reasons, energy, and also small, simple steps. And methods is saying, look, you have to update your methods for learning because the way you learned back then is not going to serve you for the world we live in now. We live in an age of autonomous electric cars, spaceships that are going to Mars, but how we learn is like a horse and buggy because our education system hasn't evolved as fast as the rest of the world has. Right? And it's not a slight against teachers. My mother became a special education teacher in public school system because she didn't know how to help me, right? My aunt is a associate professor of neurobiology at Harvard. You know, like I have such a deep appreciation for educators. We train them globally, right? You know, through Finland, South Korea, and because they want to learn how to learn, but it's a system issue, right? We just keep on teaching the same way over and over and over again. And the one thing that we weren't taught in school that I think should have been the most important is not what to learn, it's how to learn it. Because now the world is changing so fast. The half-life of information, you know this, you know, all the medicine, all the research, it gets dated so fast. And you have to be able to rethink and retool and relearn and reapply.
Yeah, school had one purpose, create competent generalists.
Yeah.
The first schools and the first funding around public school systems, Seth Godin talks about this in some of his ebooks around school and the public education system and blog post, was all around factory workers saying to the government, like, we need competent workers that can read instructions and just follow orders.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly what school is still doing. And it's really up to us to set a new model. And it's not just with our kids, because I can see people get really excited. It's also for yourself.
Very much
so.
To
invest in yourself, whether you have kids or you don't have kids, to actually take the time and say, wow, maybe I do need to relearn how to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get started with reading better, comprehending better, because in every area of my life, it's going to help me improve how I show up.
It is the ultimate meta skill, is meta learning, learning how to learn. Because if you could learn how to learn, you could apply that towards math, marketing, Mandarin, music, anything gets easier after that. It is the ultimate first skill because it amplifies every other skill. You could grant your own wish. The idea here is if you give someone an idea, they could enrich, it enriches their life. But if you teach someone how to learn, they can enrich their own life. When I'm talking about these, I open the book with why this book now, and it's driven a lot by technology, and it's creating health concerns for all of us, for your family, for your loved ones, for your team. It's these four horsemen of the apocalypse, if you will, and they're driven by technology. And they technology didn't create these conditions; it just amplifies it. So, you know, really simple, like, and everyone can relate to this: digital deluge, too much information, too little time. Right? We're drowning information. It's like taking a sip of water out of a fire hose because we don't have the skill set. So we're drowning information, but we're starving for, like, learning how to swim, right? And so that's what I want to teach people, is how to swim the waves of information that floods us. So digital deluge, also health concerns, information fatigue syndrome, information anxiety, higher blood pressure, compression of leisure time, more sleeplessness, because there's just so much information we need to keep up with in our jobs, in our work, in our careers. And that's why in the methodology, two of the superpowers, two chapters, is to overcome digital deluge. One is on speed reading, because that'll help you dramatically get through everything you need to process, and then study. There's actually a science to studying better. And I'm not just talking about students. Yes, every student should get that and learn that, but also we're students of life. You want to be an expert at your field in any area of wellness, in any area of finance or whatever, you have to study. But nobody teaches us how to study. And a parent going to a child, it's like this, going to a child and saying, focus or study. And that's like going to a child and say, play the piano, and they've never taken a class on playing the piano. They're just expected to know how to focus or how to study. And so that's digital deluge's first one. Digital distraction is another one. I mean, come on. App notifications, social media alerts, ring, dings, pings. We cannot concentrate anymore. And that's affecting our performance. It's affecting our peace of mind. You know, in the book, I talk about the myth, another lie, limited idea, entertain, just for our review, is multitasking. There is no such thing as multitasking. What you're doing is task switching. And in the book, I cite studies where it not only takes more time, because it could take anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes to regain your focus and flow into that next activity. You think you're doing it, but you're not. You're actually wasting time. And it uses up a lot of glucose in your brain. It requires a lot of fuel to be able to switch tasks. So multitasking actually doesn't work. Right? But that we're in this world where we feel like we have to be doing all these things because we're training our distraction muscles every time, you know. And I have a video out there with Simon Sinek, has 27 million views, and it's just about your phone. Don't touch your phone the first half an hour of the day, because when you wake up in the morning, you're in this relaxed state of awareness. You're highly suggestible. And if the first thing you do is pick up your phone, you're rewiring your brain, number one, for distraction. every like, share, comment, cat video, whatever, you're training your distraction muscles. And so you wonder why you can't concentrate at work or in a meeting or in a conversation you're having with somebody, because your distraction muscles are so strong. And you're not only rewiring your brain for a distraction, by picking up your phone the first thing in the morning, you're rewiring your brain for reaction, which is almost as worse, meaning you're rewiring your brain to be a thermometer, to just react to things. Because you can get have you ever gotten a text message or a voicemail or social media message that just ruined your whole day? It just hijacked, you're fighting fires, and all of a sudden it puts you on the defense. First thing in the morning you wake up, you're on the defense, as opposed to consciously and mindfully planning your day to win that day, right? You've heard this phrase, in order to win the day, you have to win that first hour of the day. Your phone's going to hijack your reaction and also your distraction. There's a quote from Brendan Burchard that who wrote Motivation Manifesto and a number of great books. He says, your inbox is nothing but a convenient organizational system for other people's agenda for your life. You know, that puts you on the defense. So my point in this is digital distraction, you're training your distraction muscles. So in the book, under small, simple steps, I talk about my morning routines, little things I do every morning to build my focus. Like even something like brushing your teeth with the opposite hand. You're like, number one, you do it because it trains the opposite side of your brain, because cross laterals, we know that victims of stroke, if they're damaged on the left side of their brain, if there's paralysis that manifests, it's on the right side of their body, you know, because the left side of your brain controls the opposite side of body. But research now is showing that it's also not just a brain-body connection, there's a body-brain connection, that using your body in certain ways actually activates different parts of your brain. There are studies done at Oxford University that jugglers actually create more white matter in your brain. So using your body, as your body moves, your brain grooves. So try brushing your teeth with the opposite hand, or eating with the opposite hand engages a different part of your brain. Plus, it forces you to be present. And that most people, when they're doing their morning routine, they're thinking about everything, like their mind's everywhere. And whatever you do consistently, you get better at. And if you're constantly distracting yourself, you're getting better at being distracted. But if you're brushing your teeth with the opposite hand or eating with the opposite hand, it forces you to be now in the present, because you can't do it without it. So little things like that that don't take time, it actually can help you make time doing things that you're doing already. And so going back to this model here, you have mindset, you have motivation, and you have the methods. And then the methods work, because if you just had the mindset that, you know, wow, I could remember, you know, I'm really, really smart, and you have the motivation to do something, but you don't know how to do it, you don't have the method. Like, let's say you want to read a book a day or a book a week, and you have the mindset, like, I'm really smart, I'm a genius, I could do this. You're motivated to do it, you know all the reasons, you have plenty of energy. But the method you're using is subvocalization or back skipping, regressing, all these bad habits we learned back in school, you're not going to be able to get through that. You know, same thing with health and fitness. You could have this mindset that you could be healthy, you could be the motivation, but if you're using poor methods, you know, that's why I love your show, because you're sharing people, like, you know, you're gathering from them the mindset or their motivation or the methodology that helps them become more whole. But you need all of that for it to be complete. And that's why I wrote the book this way, because watch this. If you have the mindset and just the motivation, where that crosses over in the Venn diagram, is three intersecting circles, where mindset and motivation intersect, there's gonna be an I. I'm gonna give you three I's because I alliterate everything. You have something called inspiration. If you have the right mindset and you have motivation, you have inspiration. And there are people that speak on mindset and motivation and inspiration, right? Inspirational posts, inspirational speakers, inspirational, you know, movies. But you're still not doing it because you don't know what to do. You're inspired, but you don't know what to do, right? Where mindset crosses over and overlaps with method, it becomes ideation. You have the right mindset and you know what to do, but it stays in your mind as an idea. But you're still not doing the work because you're lacking the motivation circle. And where motivation crosses over with methods, you're motivated and you know what to do. The third I is implementation, right? Because you know what to do, but you're still stuck in that cage or that box because you're only going to be able to achieve what you believe is possible. Like, so you could have all the motivation and you've been doing the right things, but if you only believe you're worth this in a relationship, that's going to be your limit. Or if you believe that's what you're worth in your health, you just have this idea that you're broken or that you are a procrastinator or whatever, that's where your limit will be. Or your limit is like, oh, I'm too old. That's going to be your limit. And that's why you need all three. Now, when you have all three, you have a fourth bonus eye where mindset, motivation, and methods intersect. There's a fourth eye. That's integration. That's just who you are. That is the limitless state. And that's when you ask, what's the promise of the book? My goal is when you came out of this, at the end of it, you are limitless. That is your I am.
I love it, man. You know, really, it's, I love you putting the framework out there, because as you have on the back cover of the book, it's, this is an owner's manual for our brain. A lot of times when we're brought up and the people that are teaching us, they're doing their best.
Yes.
But they have their own insecurities, their bad habits, their other components, or their just lack of knowledge in a particular area. And they might be great at one area and they might not be great at another area. And when we inherit those things without questioning them, we almost don't take full advantage. You know, I think this idea when people are talking about like we only use 10% of our brain, it's almost like probably what they're really talking about, even though it's not true scientifically, is that we're not taking advantage of all the different tools that are out there, right? Mm-hmm. Like that can be true. The tools that you're pointing out that you're sharing with individuals. And when you see it in a framework standpoint, you can actually get it and do what I think is the most important start to this process, is that we're so judgmental to ourselves and people beat themselves up so much for not being good, especially when it comes to areas of reading, memory, learning,
focus, solving problems, just solving making problems, good decisions, all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. People are so hard on themselves. So for the person that's out there that's listening to this interview and is like feeling so motivated by everything that you're sharing and excited about jumping into it, picking up a copy of the book and following things there, and there's still that big chunk inside of them, right? Which for sure relates to the mindset piece, but they're just hard on themselves regularly.
Yeah.
What would you tell that person who's listening?
Yeah, I would say to this person, and I've done a lot of research in the area of self-compassion, is first be kind to yourself. Because when you are hard on yourself, you would think that you're more likely to follow through, but it's actually the opposite. When you offer yourself kindness and you're kind to yourself, you're more likely to follow through. So the first advice would be acknowledge that you're human, you know, and that we all grew up with this box. And this box comes in different forms, but it's formed by our experiences, by our expectations of other people, by our environment that formed our box. So whatever happened in the past, that happened in the past. But we are responsible for right now where we are currently. And my message to you is this. You know, I'm constantly seeking, I believe to be truly happy, we have to be playing and practicing at the edge of our limits. You know, I have a little bit of a fear of heights, because like one of the three traumatic brain injuries I had was falling off of a roof, right? And so that you make an association, like heights are really bad. And so you'll see me on Instagram all the time doing these zero G flights or jump, you know, skydiving and doing these things, because I wanna train, I wanna rewire, I wanna own and have sovereignty and get my power back. When you get limitless or you gift limitless, you're giving people their power back, saying you are in control. And talking about heights, you know, on the walk here, I notice these things all the time, these birds in the trees. And I always do this thought experiment where I imagine, like, if I was that bird, what would I see and what would I feel? Like, why is that bird like chirping and singing and it's so calm and confident all the way up there? I would be freaking out up there. But I noticed it's not because it's calm and confident, not because it puts its trust in the tree branch. It's calm and it's confident because it puts its trust in its own wings. And I believe right now that while talking about flying, that while the beauty is in the butterfly, the growth happens in the cocoon. It's that, and right now, you know, in where the world is, we're in a cocoon, we're cocooning, right? And we're social distancing, and now is the time where we really reveals who we are. Where are you going to use this time to be able to focus on fear and get your mind, your amygdala part of your brain hijacked by, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, and your focus is going to go there, because there's an algorithm to your mind, just like there's an algorithm to Instagram and Facebook, that whatever, it's interesting. If you start, you haven't noticed that it just shows you, it delivers you what you want to see the most, right? If you start liking and commenting on all cat videos, it's just going to show you more cat stuff. That's how your mind works. By questions, the power of your questions. If you ask yourself, you know, about certain things, you're going to start getting answers, because questions are the answer. Here's a quick example, really quick example that will help everybody right now. We all have a dominant question, and you have 50, 70,000 thoughts a day. And a lot of those thoughts we have are questions, come in the form of questions. And there's certain questions we ask more than any other question. And I realize this because there's probably one, two, or three questions you ask a lot. Let me give an example. My friend, we went through this exercise that we do in this book, and we found out that her dominant question is, how do I get people to like me? Now, you don't know her age, you don't know her background, you don't know her ethnicity, you don't know her job, you don't know where she, you don't know anything about her, but you know a lot about her. What's her personality like, or what's someone's life like if they ask themselves all the time, how do I get people to like me? How would you describe that person? What would you imagine their personality's like?
Yeah, I would say primarily a people pleaser.
Yeah. Very much so. They're a people pleaser. They're a sycophant. They're always martyring themselves. Their personality changes depending on who they're around, because their interests are their interests. You know what I mean? And you know all this about their personality, and you know one question she asks herself. My question for everybody here is, what's your dominant question? Like, you know, on the cover of the book, we have, Dr. Mark Hyman wrote the foreword. And the cover blurb is from Will Smith, and it says something very flattering. It says, you know, Jim Quick knows how to get the maximum out of me as a human being. And I help actors speed read scripts, memorize their lines, be focused and concentrate on the task at hand. And I remember I was spending the day with him in Toronto filming a superhero film, and he was filming at night, so we spent the day together, which is really hard, just filming from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. Everyone thinks like Hollywood and all these celebrities have like glamorous lives. It's boring as heck, right? But during that day, one of the things we did, we discovered his dominant question, and his dominant question is, how can I make this moment more magical? Actually, we enhanced it. It originally was, how do I make this moment more magical? And then we were like, how can we make this even better? Because that's another question, right? And we're like, how do we make this moment even more magical? Because that presumes it's already magical. And it's interesting because we were filming at night. It was the dead of winter in Toronto, of all places. His family from West Philly, we know the song, was there. And we're out in this tent and it's freezing. And we're watching, you know, people shoot their stuff. And he starts to bring people blankets, and he starts to make hot chocolate for all of us. And he starts cracking jokes and telling stories during the break. And he was living his dominant question, because I believe the life you live are the lessons you teach. The life you live are the lessons you teach. And, you know, I believe all these questions are very important. So coming back to this book right now, you could be focusing on what's wrong in the world. You could ask, like, why am I always sick? And then you're going to come up with evidence all the time, because your reticular activating system is going to look for the things. Primarily, people don't know this, when we're talking about brains and whether they're broken or not, our brain primarily is a deletion device. We're trying to keep information out, because if we paid attention to there's a billion stimuli you could pay attention to. That would make anyone insane. So what gets through that filter are the things we ask questions about. We charge that reticular activating system, which is kind of like that algorithm for Facebook or Instagram, that whatever you ask for, you're going to see, get more of. And if you're just focusing on worry and fear and threat, that becomes our reality, and we start focusing and we become myopic, and we don't see the opportunity. We don't see the blessings, the gratitude, the goodness, everything else, because we filter that out, just like we filter out everything else that's not a cat on our Instagram, if that's what we're liking all the time. You know, so our minds work in those kind of mysterious ways.
So for you growing up, you know, taking it full circle on the hero's journey, what do you think your dominant question was, even if you weren't present to it? And what's your dominant question today?
Yeah. So my dominant question in the beginning when I was suffering and struggling and I felt like I was broken was, how do I be invisible? You know, how do I shrink down because I don't want to be seen? Because you don't want the spotlight on you when you feel like you're not much, because you don't have the answers and you don't feel like you have a lot of worth to give to somebody. So that was my question. Later on, it evolved because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I started asking better questions like, you know, how can I learn this in a more fun way? What is that person doing that I'm not doing that's getting them this kind of result? So my dominant question now is more, how do I make this better? How do I make this better? I am constantly asking myself, how do I make this better? Because growing up labeled broken, I wanted to fix things. And so I wanted to find out, how do I make my health better? How do I make this book better? How do I make this my relationships better? This friendship better? How do I become a better speaker? And I obsess about that question. And all of a sudden, I start getting those answers. And I believe questions are the answer. And the ultimate question that I really wanted to solve when I was in that hospital bed, you know, in the darkest time of my life was, really, I wanted to solve this riddle. How does my brain work so I could work my brain? If the brain really is the ultimate technology, you know, even technology, digital, you know, we talked about digital deluge, digital distraction, digital dementia, where we're losing our memory because our, you know, we're outsourcing our, you know, our brains, our memory to our smart devices, and digital deduction, which is we're not even thinking anymore. They're finding this, that's a fourth supervillain, is digital deduction, where they're finding kids right now, they don't have the ability to reason, critical thinking ability, or analytical ability, because technology is doing all the thinking for us, you know, just like it's doing all the memory for us. And I'm not saying this is not, I'm not anti-technology. Technology allows us to reach the world in this conversation. It allows us to connect, and we get unfettered access to all the information in the world. It's amazing. But if technology is a tool for you to use, but if technology is using you, who becomes the tool? We become the tool, right? And that's not that part of the equation that you want. And so the message that I have is, ask yourself a better question. I wanted to know, solve this riddle, this puzzle, how does my brain work? If my brain controls everything in my life, right? That's why I love your podcast. It controls our relationships, our career, our business, our habits, our mindset, our feelings. How does my brain work so I can work my brain? So that's why I wanted to write this, and we call it an owner's manual for the brain. That if you watch the book or the movie Limitless, they take a pill and gives you all that thing. You know, your partner, Mark, he writes it right here in his foreword. He said, there is no genius pill, but Jim gives you the process for unlocking your best brain and your brightest future. So there's no pill, but there is a process with no side effects.
I love it, man. Limitless, it's out there. Upgrade your brain, learn anything faster, and unlock your exceptional life. Jim, super appreciate you coming on the podcast and just dishing knowledge. It's taken, It's about 100 episodes in. We finally got you on.
I love this. Thank you so much. We're doing actually something extremely special for everyone who's listening.
Yeah,
right,
tell
now.
Them all about it. And tell them also, you know, I wanted to mention, have you mention about at the end of the book, there's that action plan that's there.
Yeah.
Right? Talk about both of those.
Sure. At the end of the book, we put a 10. So everything is, remember those small, simple steps. There are things that you could do with very little energy or effort. So throughout the book, I created these quick starts, something you could do in 60 seconds or less. So I teach you something and immediately we apply it, because knowledge is not power, it's potential power. When you act on it, it becomes power. So it really is not only a guide, it is actually brain training. And so throughout the book, you have these quick starts where you start making little steps in progress. Because I believe little by little, a little becomes a lot. That consistency compounds. It's not what you eat once in a while that's gonna make the difference, or working out once in a while. It's the consistency. So this book builds consistency. So at the end, we formulate a 10-day plan to become limitless. And for those people that order the book today and pre-order the book at limitlessbook.com, I recorded a 10-day video program called Quick Start, How to Unlock Your Limitless Brain. And it's me, for those of you who like to listen to audio or video, it's me walking you through the basic fundamentals of the Limitless framework. I introduce you on video, the framework, and then I walk you through some of the key points to mastering your mindset, your motivation, and the methods. You actually learn in this free video series, which we do not charge for, and when it's not available anywhere else, how to speed read, how to remember what you read. Because I want you, when you get this book, to already feel like you're limitless. And then you're gonna finish this book. You're gonna read it faster, you're gonna be able to focus, you're gonna be able to apply everything. But I really wanted to make this a no-brainer, because the essence of what we're talking about here is this, that your life is like an egg, that if an egg is broken by an outside force, life ends. But if it's broken by an inside force, life begins. Great things begin on the inside. And if you're still listening to this, you have greatness inside of you. You know, I know what's in this book, you know, because it's 3 decades of research and field-tested practices that has worked with everybody from all different ages and backgrounds, and some of the highest performers you've ever heard of. And I know what's in this book, but I also know what's inside of you. And what's inside of you is so great. When I said believe in those wings, everybody has the potential to do this. And so the starting point is to take a small, simple step. One step in another direction completely changes your destination or your destiny. And so no matter what you've been through, remember, part of self-care is not just meditation, and it's not just eating the best foods. That's a huge part of it. Part of self-care really is looking in the mirror and falling in love with that person in the mirror who's been through so much but is still standing, right? And no outside relationship is going to give you the love that your soul needs from you. And part of loving yourself is doing things that help you to grow, that helps you to be able to give. And I believe it starts with the theme of this podcast, which is your brain. You know, and then I really believe that once you understand the power, get a glimpse of what you could do with your brain, then you will become absolutely unstoppable.
Powerful, my friend. Super powerful. And you wrote the owner's manual to help people step into that power. We can find all the links that Jim mentioned, especially to get the book, pre-order it today in the show notes. Jim, people can find you on social. You're pretty active.
So I would say the best way, besides limitlessbook.com, to get your bonus is our podcast. You search Jim Quick in your podcast app, and our podcasts are 15 minutes long on how to remember names, how to change your habits, how to learn languages and all that good stuff, how to memorize the best brain foods. And then social media. I would actually challenge everybody here to do one step, because again, you got to take action right away. Take a screenshot of this episode and tag us both in it and share your big aha. One of the fastest ways to become limitless and to learn anything faster is to teach other people, because when you teach something, you get to learn it twice, right? You learn so you can earn, so you can return. You come back, you know, into the matrix, into the ordinary world, and you bring this extraordinary gifts to other people. And so take a screenshot of this episode, tag us both. Mine is at Jim Quick, yours?
Drew Perowit.
And what I'll do, and in the description, either take a picture of your notes or in the description, share your big aha. What's the one thing that you got out of this conversation that you want to share with other people? And I will, as I always do, repost some of my favorites, and I will send an actual signed galley to one of my favorites.
I love it. So you have the challenge. Quick. A small step in the right direction. Exactly. You can share this episode with a friend. Jim, thank you so much for coming on the Broken Brain Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, everyone.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.